And Kathy Dawes now, along with Roman Gonta, Director, Center of Excellence for Vector-Borne Diseases, College of Veterinary Medicine at K-State. Been trying to get with you for a little while. You were traveling, it sounds
like. Oh, yes, traveling a lot. I was in Grenada for a couple of weeks. As a matter of fact, we were working on some tick-related projects with St. George's University and also some NIH grant review projects and so on. I was busy here and there.
Well, it was interesting because I think I'd inquired about this talk about allergies to red meat because of Lone Star ticks, and you indicated you when you got back you'd share with me, and of course, a big news release in the interim there. But welcome you back, and I mean, ticks are concerning in so many different ways. I think we've known about Lyme disease for a very long time, but there's a lot of other things that can happen when it comes to ticks.
It's very true. Ticks, one particular tick that we should be most concerned these days is the one which is causing the red meat allergy. Its common name is a Lone Star tick. A scientific name is Amblyomma americanum. The reason it's called Lone Star tick because it has a kind of white spot in the back, especially the female adult tick. And these are aggressive feeders, and they carry a number of different pathogens. Actually, I can list six of them. Then if you add the red meat, that becomes a seven. Red meat allergy emerged about 10-plus years ago. Actually, as a matter of fact, it was discovered in Europe and Australia. And then there was a good correlation with this particular tick, Lone Star tick, and the red meat allergy in the U.S. because it's mostly eastern, northeastern regions and parts of Midwest, and two-thirds of the Kansas and Oklahoma and all these other places where tick is prevalent, red meat allergies were also documented at high numbers, like even places like Tennessee and other places. So the association was quickly realized and why the red meat allergies are caused and what may be the factor. And one of the important distinctions between the red meat allergy versus the other allergies is that red meat allergy doesn't happen immediately after you take red meat. Red meat could be beef, it could be pork, it could be lamb, or anything that people eat. But typically after 3 to 8 hours following eating, people might develop any kind of, it could be itchy feeling, rashes, or kind of angioedema. Or in serious cases, it could be anaphylactic shock, and in that case, people may have to get immediate attention. Well, what causes the red meat allergy and what is the link between the tick and red meat is the biggest question everyone asks. This particular tick is an aggressive feeder, meaning that they can feed on any different animals. And so the most prominent host for this tick is the white-tailed deer. And the deer and other animals, but not the apes and humans, have on their meat or on their cell membranes a sugar, which is like a household sugar, but it's different. It is called alpha-gal, galactase alpha-1,3 galactose. So it is like a disaccharide, just like sugar. But since we don't have it, but the animals have it, when the tick takes a meal, it processes it in her previous life cycle stages. But when it's feeding on people, it releases straight into the system, goes into the blood, and then we start developing antibodies. Antibodies are something that we fight. It's like a defense mechanism that we develop to fight against this anything that's foreign. So in this case, these antibodies will build up with time. And then when people start eating the red meat, and after a few hours, they start digesting, then this particular sugar, alpha-gal, is released into the gut, and then they start reacting to it. That's why it's a delayed allergic response compared to most other cases where allergy might be very quicker. So that is the important thing about the red meat allergy. But when it comes to this tick, as I mentioned, it can cause ehrlichiosis, it can cause tularemia, it can cause Rocky Mountain spotted fever, and heartland virus, and you may know recently, bourbon virus. That was first discovered in Kansas, and now in Missouri, and last year in Oklahoma. So this is spreading most likely. This particular tick is playing a role.
And that's so sad. I mean, we're kind of in a beef state.
Yes, it is. But having said that, should I or anyone should be worried if they have one tick bite? Probably not. And with again, you don't just because you have tick bites, you don't have to worry. Not necessarily that one is building. So I would not say that you don't eat red meat because you had a tick bite. So by all means, enjoy your meat, steak, whatever you want. But if you're developing something, maybe something to pay attention to. And that was the point that maybe there is something happening to you. But there is always a historical link. Someone may have repeated exposure to the ticks. And can this go away? That is another question people might have. Probably the answer is yes, but it might take 1, 2, 3 years, depending on how much raise of antibodies, and with time they go down. So you may have to have some patience to deal with it.
Ticks have been around for ever since I can remember. I'm guessing they probably have been hundreds of years.
Oh,
probably
thousands of years, even millions of years. Ticks. Ticks are very unique ectoparasites, we call them, because they need a blood meal for their life cycle. A female tick lays as many as 5,000 eggs. And all these eggs lay, you know, hatched to become larva, and they need a blood meal, typically about small mammals and birds that they feed on, and they mature to become nymphs. Then they need, literally they can feed on any animals, including people. And then the adults will also come into picture, and they all these different feeding behavior makes these ticks more aggressive. And they are there for a long time, and they're spreading because of the white-tailed deer expansion, deforestation, and everything else.
Roman, I don't know if I warned you. This is a call-in program, and you have two people on the line wanting to talk to you. You'll need a set of headphones in order to hear them. Welcome to In Focus this morning, and you're on with Roman Gonta, and go ahead with your question or comment having to do with ticks.
Good morning. Okay. Wow, Kathy, what a guest. One of the best you've had in a long time.
Thank you.
I have a couple of questions. Very informative. A couple of questions not related to ticks, but you brought up two items. One is the tularemia in rabbits, and that is very profound in our area. And I don't know if people know that or not, because I know people do get roadkill rabbits and they shoot them. But anyway, that I'm sure you can expand on that. And the second one is, out at the Rocky Ford fishing area that we constructed a few years back, there's a warning that you should only eat so many fish out of there in a month. And that, I understand, is because of the insecticides and pesticides and whatever's in the water. Would you expand on that? Because I don't know if everybody knows that, and the rabbit thing is very important. And I want to tell you, this is the best description about ticks that I've ever heard. Thank you for being on, and Kathy, you got a great guest.
Thank you, and this is one of our regular callers, so that's high praise.
Thank you. You made my day.
But if you want to expand on, he mentioned the rabbit
issue. Yeah, sure. I think you had a couple of questions. First, you asked about the tularemia in the rabbits. Yes, the rabbits is one of the sources where the tularemia can be transmitted, and the ticks also is another source. So I think one, especially the wild rabbits, when they're exposed, there is always a risk for acquiring tularemia infections. And I think you asked about a question about fishing, if I didn't get it right. But I don't think I'm worried about ticks from which people might develop allergies, if that's what your question is. But, you know, from the rabbits, you can also acquire the ticks. These ticks can feed on any animals, including the rabbits.
We have another call. Welcome to In Focus. Go ahead, please. Thanks for your patience.
Now, since you were talking about ticks, I was curious. I had a conversation with someone that was concerned about all the repellents that they put on young children and really didn't want to do that. Do you have any advice as far as natural repellents that people can use that they don't want to put chemicals on their children?
Well, I'm really not an expert to talk about those, but people do say that some kind of neem oils and other natural oils might prevent. I don't know. But repellents, again, you don't have to put these repellents unless there is a risk for exposure to ticks or mosquitoes. Like, you know, people are going out for camping, and especially we avoid putting them on the ice or other places where you can cause a different kind of risk or challenge.
But they can drop from trees. I mean, it can be more than just camping, from what I understand.
The ticks?
Yes. Is that true?
No, I don't think so.
Really? No. It's not
that,
true.
People do say that, you know, the wind can get them,
mm-hmm.
and the ticks will drop.
That's a myth.
No, it's a myth. I don't think so. But there may be possibility that small, larval stages might get, with a big wind, it might float. I don't know that. But dropping from the trees is unlikely. But what ticks do is they are questing, so they're waiting for a host to come in close contact, because these are very unusual ectoparasites. They can live for up to 2 years without having survive on the environment for long periods of time, even if they're not feeding on any host. But what they're trying to do is they're hoping for a host to come in close contact. They may be in the blade of grass, or in a wooded area, or some dead leaves and other places when people are walking or crawling. But they can sense that there are people around or animals around, because they feel the warmth of the body and the smell of the carbon dioxide released from people.
Well, I have learned something new today,
because
I always thought they could drop out of trees, but I got that wrong,
that's
I guess.
Not true.
It's now 9:35. Let's take a break. I know I'm learning right along with our listeners. Roman Gonta with us today, and again, Director of Excellence for Vector-Borne Diseases, College of Veterinary Medicine at K-State. We'll spend a few more minutes with Roman and just a moment here. Do appreciate the calls, 537-1350. You're listening to In Focus.
Thank you.